providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are now shifting our focus more to the energy sectors. We're chatting with Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. We will post a link in the show notes to the Energy Prospectus Group so you can keep up to date on Dan's articles, his views on the oil and natural gas prices, and even more importantly, his reports on companies, which we will be getting into, two companies he wanted to highlight later on in this segment. Dan, starting off with a general comment on the oil price. Oil has been flat. It's actually been kind of a boring market, or at least a trendless market, as prices have more or less been stuck above the low 70s up to about the mid 80s all year, even with geopolitical issues and comments out of OPEC. We see some moves on a short-term basis, but again, not much of a trend other than sideways price action. That being said, these prices, right around $80 a barrel, are still pretty decent for oil companies. So Dan, when you're building a portfolio or looking at companies to buy in this environment, where do you focus? Which companies do you think offer the best upside potential in a flat oil price?
Well, clearly the ones that produce a lot of oil and some that produce a lot of high value NGLs, natural gas liquids, I'm favoring those right now because I just really can't tell when is this depressed gas price going to go away and we can start getting some decent gas prices. We can talk about that in a minute. But on the oil market, you know, we had more and more stuff coming out about recession in China and less demand. And I think that's hurting a lot of commodities. So the oil price actually dipped briefly down to 72. And then you had this, you know, assassination in Iran and they blame it on Israel, which I still don't think is taking credit for it. But there's a lot of saber rattling over there. And then a few days ago, the price of WTI spiked all the way up to $80 again. And then it, you know, pulled back a few bucks today and yesterday. And anyway, but I've spoken at several conferences since May, and in every one of them, I say the right price, in my opinion, is 75 to 85. And it seems like it's staying within that range bound, except for some brief outings. And I think if it goes below 75, it's not going to stay there very long. You're still getting some pretty bullish storage reports. Wednesday, EIA reported a little build in crude oil, but they reported big declines in gasoline and diesel inventory. So the demand's still there. And then I found out that the build in crude oil inventory in the U.S. was really caused by lack of exports. We had less exports of light oil because we don't have enough capacity to process to refine all that light oil coming out of the Permian Basin. So they're exporting that out of Corpus Christi. And we were importing a lot of heavy oil, which is what our refineries are built to handle. So anyway, I just think you have to take a long-term view and you got to base your investment decisions on where you think oil prices are going to settle. And then do a worst case scenario. Okay, you think, well, if it really got bad, I guess it was really had a global recession. Could it drop to 65 or 60? Well, maybe. Then run your models that way. But also, I think you need to have a base case, high case, and low case. And the really good thing from an investment standpoint, these companies have been so much more financially disciplined that their balance sheets are in really good shape. Very few of the ones that I follow have any serious current debt issues that they got to deal with. They were all cash flow. All the companies, I think one or two of them in our three model portfolios did not beat my forecast. But other than that, all of our Sweet 16 companies all beat my forecast and reported really strong operating cash flow and free cash flow. And most of them pay dividends.
Yeah, Dan, the oil companies seem to be in a more solid place than they've been in really over a decade, where the balance sheets are pristine, they're buying back shares, they're paying dividends, and 75 to 85, that range, they're doing just fine there. If there was a recessionary concern, that'd be a different story. But let's also get a quick look at how you're seeing the nat gas markets. It's finally up over 2 again, up in the 220s at the time of this recording. Do you see anything coming down the pipeline that changes the math for the nat gas markets?
Well, I mean, once you get to September, then people start thinking, hey, we are going to have another winter. But I can tell you right now in August, down here in South Texas, it's been extremely hot and humid. And we've been having this onshore flow from the Gulf. So we get a lot of humidity pumping in here. And then you got 95 to 100 degrees. And I have two air conditioners. They run 24/7, so I'm having big electric bills. And so all of our gas fire, we have a lot of gas fired power plants in the state of Texas and Oklahoma and all across the South, actually, we do. And they are running full bore. So I think it's been 13 out of the last 14 weeks, the storage builds have been way below the five-year average. So the surplus of gas in storage, we still have a surplus. If you look at U.S. storage for gas, it's about 200 or so BCF above the five-year average. That sounds like a lot, but we have storage capacity of 4.2 TCF of gas. We're not even close to being full in storage, but they look at that surplus and the utilities are not worried about making it through the next winter. And so there's no bidding war. And the only time you get really big spikes in the physical gas market is when you get the utilities that bring the gas to your house or your business, they're bidding against each other for physical supply. And that's when you get these big spikes. Like I think in August of 2022, we had a spike to over $9 because the storage level was low. We were headed in. That's when all the LNG exporters were really ramping up with the situation between Ukraine and Russia and Europe. It was worried about making it through the next winter. And there was a big demand. So it can happen. So what we're really looking for in gas is hoping for, we have a regular winter. We've had two warm winters in the eastern half of the United States, the two last years. But the long range forecast that I'm getting is this should be a colder than normal winter in the eastern United States because of La Niña in the Pacific. And then we do have two pretty large LNG export facilities, Plaquemines and, what's the other one? There's another big one that's supposed to come on before the end of the year. And both of those are going to be like 3.5 BCF more per day of export capacity. And a Freeport can stay online. You know, it was offline for another month or so when that Hurricane Beryl put it out of commission for a while. So it's back up now. And we get all the LNG export capacity, things run at full speed, and we do not have a surplus then because they're going to need it.
Man, we've been hearing so much about these LNG terminals and just how much that could change the market. It's, I think, almost starting to fall on deaf ears because, well, they're coming, but maybe they will cause that price spike that I know a lot of the bulls are waiting for. Back into more of the energy stocks, then you sent us a tweet that was sent out by Eric Nuttall recently that mentioned the disconnect between small and mid-cap energy stocks to large-cap energy stocks, especially in Canada. Now, this is a trend we are seeing in the resource sector in a lot of different commodities where the small, even mid-sized guys just are not getting any sort of capital inflows, while the majors, they seem to have cleaned up their balance sheets and are doing much better. What's some of the opportunities you are seeing within this disconnect then?
Yeah, I mean, I see so many of these companies that I follow are trading at ridiculous multiples of cash flow. I worked for Hess and we did business development. If we could buy a company for 6x operating cash flow, and especially if they had a lot of acreage that went with it, because the only way you can get into the Permian Basin now, since all the acreage is leased up, is to buy another company. That's the only way. That's why you're seeing a lot of these deals. But they're doing it to get development drilling locations as much as they are current production. And so I think that's where the opportunity is. I just finished a report on Devon and this big deal that they acquired a private company up in North Dakota that gives them like 500 more high value drilling locations and a bunch of refrac potential up there too. But those are the things that I'm looking for. In my opinion, running room is undervalued. You want to look at these companies that got hundreds and even thousands of development drilling locations that they hold the leasehold. They control that acreage. And if a lot of it is already held by production, they've already got some producing wells holding those leases, that makes that acreage even more valuable. And that's what I look for. You know, you want to make sure they got enough cash flow to survive. And that's where you run your low case and say, okay, what if oil went to 60? Are they still free cash flow positive? But a lot of these companies have so much cash flow now, and they believe that their stock is really undervalued. And that's why you see so many of these companies with stock buyback programs, they're aggressively buying back their stock. And they're paying nice dividends.
Well, in addition to them buying back their stock, could they be M&A targets where somebody else just buys their company? Because there's a big divorce between where the balance sheets are of the larger companies and the valuations and the smaller ones. Could they use that to their advantage and scoop up some of these small to mid caps?
Yeah, and there's been several large acquisitions, and we've seen several of them that are involved private companies. Like these, when we want to talk about Northern Oil and Gas, I want to talk about today, they've joined forces with SM Energy and with Vital Energy, and they've made two really large acquisitions that are going to impact those companies by buying private companies. And then the other one with XCL assets, I think that one might be public, but anyway. So there's a lot of money looking for deals, and the only way to get into some of these plays like the Permian Basin, especially because all the acreage is held by production, is held by other companies, and it's not leasable. So the only way you can get in there is to buy out another company.
All right, let's get into the stocks then. Northern Oil and Gas, as you said, NOG. This is an aggressive growth company. It's in your Sweet 16 growth portfolio. Also does pay a dividend of a little over 4%. This company has really been on the acquisition path with, I believe, 14 acquisitions in 3 years. Let's talk about what's going on in terms of Northern Oil and Gas, what you like about its growth profile.
Well, that's one company that has not had any trouble getting capital to make these deals, because it's been pretty it's been around for a long time. They were around, I think, when I was working for Hess, and they were just kind of this little company that acquired, you know, small working interests, and they just grown and grown and grown. And then now they've just gotten really aggressive, and it's a pretty large company. It pays a decent dividend. $1.68 is the dividend now. And I know they want to raise the dividend. I think they've raised the dividend 3 or 4 times since I've added it to our Sweet 16 3 years ago. The stock's up like 200 or 300% since I added it. But anyway, it's still 4.3% dividend yield, but it's growth. It's just tremendous production growth. They've recently, SM Energy is a company that's in our Sweet 16. Actually, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was really worried about that company even making it. And man, they have just really firmed up their balance sheet. It looks really strong. So that's another one, SM Energy, for your listeners to look at. But I like this deal. What Northern did is they took 20% of an acquisition, and XM Energy took the other 80%. And XM Energy is going to operate it, because Northern is a non-op company. They don't operate any of their production. So for non-op companies, you really want to look at the quality of the operating companies that they've teamed up with. And SM Energy is definitely a high-quality company. And anyway, but they're going to – Northern, I remember when they were below 10,000 barrels a day of production. Now they're going to be over 135,000 BOE per day of production. And they are heavily weighted to crude oil, like 60%, 63% crude oil. So I like it. I like the dividend, but more than that, I like the growth. And that deal with SM Energy, where they're acquiring, they call it the XLC assets, that's a big deal. And they did a bolt-on thing too. They had an option to acquire another 20% acreage. And so they did that. So now the deal's up to about a $600 million deal just for NOG. That's just NOG's share, 20%. So multiply that by 4 times and you get what SM Energy has to pay. But anyway, looks really good, and it's going to, you know, give them another 10,500 barrels a day of current production and a lot of development drilling inventory. So it looks really good.
Well, Dan, I wanted to dig in and maybe have you expand on them being non-operated positions. So they usually have these kind of minority positions, like you're saying, another operator is doing the work, but they're kind of spreading their bets around. Like you say, it's the quality of the operators, but also, is this an interesting strategy for a company like Northern Oil and Gas, where they're not deploying their own people, they're not the ones actually doing the work, they're just buying the, I guess, the minority interest in a lot of these. How do you think that is as a business strategy?
Well, what I like about the business strategy, well, I used to not like, because you can't control your CapEx. Because see, then they'll get in there, and then what if you're in with a big company like EOG, and EOG just decides to run 10 rigs out there and start drilling up everything? Then you got to keep up with those drilling costs if you want to continue to hold your interest. So your interest has to be kind of aligned with the other company. So, but now they're big enough and they have enough, they have like $1 billion line of credit. They now have access to capital where they can easily keep up with the drilling programs. And so they don't like to take more than like 20-30% of the working interest. And then I think because they're big now, they are treated as a true partner. So I don't think SM Energy is going to try to drill them out of the deal, try to spend money so fast that they can force them out. That's not going to happen. So it's just the bigger they got, the more it made sense to do this. And so they don't have the overhead of the field people. They don't have a bunch of pumpers. They're not running rigs or anything out in the field. They're just a non-op working interest, and they just pay their invoices when they get them. I think Northern only has like 38 employees total, and it's a pretty big company to have that little of a staff. So their G&A expense is really low. And anyway, so far the numbers on it look really good. If any of your listeners want to send me a note, we just updated our profile on the company, and the forecast model looks really strong on that company.
Yeah, the key is have that money, because while they don't have to operate these things, they do have those invoices coming in with the operating companies. Look, they've had so many acquisitions here. Again, 14 acquisitions in 3 years. You would assume all these are accretive, but that is their growth path, is more acquisitions. So how much do they need to keep their foot on the pedal to keep this stock interesting in your eyes on the acquisition front?
Well, one thing that increased my value of it is, okay, they were in a big acquisition with Earthstone Energy, and then Earthstone was acquired by Permian Resources, a much larger company. So now Permian Resources has taken over all the operations of the stuff in the Permian Basin, which is in the Delaware Basin. To the western third of the Permian Basin is called the Delaware Basin. And anyway, size matters in this business. So Permian Resources is running a lot more rigs, so they get better drilling rig rates, they get better tubular rates. Their completed well cost since they did the Earthstone acquisition have gone down by 10 or 15%, so well-level economics, and that's all to the benefit of Northern, their non-op partner, because then Northern gets those better drilling rates, and Northern gets those better lower completed well costs. So that was a big plus for me in my evaluation. But it's the same thing with SM Energy. Their symbol is SM. Look it up. It's a big company and a very highly respected company. Their partnership with Vital Energy, Vital's a little bit smaller, but still over 100,000 BOE per day, and also rapidly growing. In fact, this deal that they're making with NOG is a pretty big deal for Vital. And so all three of them, and they're all three of those companies are in my Sweet 16. So I know them really well. So it was really easy for me to just combine the forecast models on those companies.
Yeah, nice to see a couple of the Sweet 16 ones getting some life here and get a little interest. Let's also bring up one that you mentioned to us that you'd like to highlight today, and that's Riley Exploration Permian. REPX is the ticker. We've actually talked to you about this company before, Dan, a couple months ago, but you're continually bullish on the growth profile, and they do have a lot of heavy weighting to crude, I think 68% crude. So how are you looking at the growth for Riley Exploration Permian?
Yeah, they're a much smaller company. They're in our small cap growth portfolio, and they've recently closed two acquisitions in Eddy County. That's in southeastern New Mexico. It's not too far across the Texas state line. But so their legacy field, their number one field, is in Yoakum County. And it is literally right on the border between Texas and New Mexico. And then if you went straight west from there, about 100 miles or so, a couple hundred miles maybe, you're in Eddy County. Now, Eddy County, some of the best wells in the United States are being drilled in Eddy County, but they're being drilled further south from where Riley is. Riley's expertise is to go into these older oil fields that were developed on vertical wells, and they're drilling horizontal wells. It's the same thing that like in-play oil is doing, the same thing up there in Canada. So they're drilling these 1 mile long laterals or whatever, opening up a lot more of the zone and getting better well results on that. And so now about, I think 60% of their production is in Texas and 40% is in New Mexico now. So now they've got two core areas, and the one over in New Mexico has a lot more upside. We talked about this in April, and remember they're in that power partnership. It's called RPC Power, where they're going out into the field and building on-site power generation, where they're using the gas like right out of the ground, and they're generating electricity. And they're doing it more to increase the reliability of their electricity. I talked to them just yesterday, actually, and they're very pleased with that. They think that things got a lot of upside, and they're going to be generating more electricity than they're using. And every once in a while out there, because of this heat in South Texas, ERCOT, which handles our electric power source out here in Texas, they will have big peak rates, where then they can sell some of that power into the grid at really high rates. And they're very enthusiastic about it. When I talk to them, they think it's a great deal. And so it just has a lot of potential. My current valuation on that stock, its symbol is REPX. I just updated my forecast model after talking to the company yesterday on a conference call. I went over my forecast model with them. I was a little bit too high on operating expenses, and I was also too high on their current income taxes. So it's raised my current valuation a couple bucks to $53 per share. And First Call's price target is 47. And where is it now? It's just in the low 30s, I think. No, wait. No, only 26. It's 26, 46. It closed there on August the 13th. And the current dividend is 144, so it's got a 5.4% dividend yield. And it looks to me like it could be a double for us. And my valuation is almost double the current share price.
So, Dan, this stock really hasn't done much this year. I think it is up year to date, but the last about 5 to 6 months has been choppy sideways action. It does not have nearly the uptrend that NOG, Northern Oil and Gas, does. What's the news that's going to actually get investors more interested in this stock when, I guess, in a way, it's kind of underperforming some of the outperformers?
Well, they did tell me they want to keep raising the dividend. That'll help. But I just think if they keep putting out production growth, and based on what I heard yesterday, they were very confident that they're going to report higher production in the third quarter and then higher production still in the fourth quarter. And they really have a lot of ups because they were doing a CO2 flood pilot project that had a lot of potential. But they told me yesterday that they think the potential they have in Eddy County is a lot higher. So they're going to kind of shelf that CO2 project, and they're going to go, drill more wells and develop that acres that they recently got in Eddy County. So, they're pretty bullish on their outlook, and the balance sheet's in good shape. They were able to finance those deals at pretty reasonable price, and the numbers look really good on the company. So they're in the Central Basin platform. That's the same thing with Ring Energy. Even though they're putting up really nice numbers, it's like the Wall Street gang doesn't care about the Central Basin platform. So those are shallow zones. They're not drilling these deep horizontal wells that come on at 1,500 barrels a day. But the well level economics, the wells are so much cheaper that the well level economics are really good. So you need to look at that, not just these big IP rates that come on strong and then drop quickly. But anyway.
So Dan, just one more quick question. Then we talk a lot about U.S. stocks, and we even touched a little bit on some of the Canadian small cap stocks. But are you seeing any motivation to move more into some of the Canadian plays over the U.S. plays? Or in your eyes, do you think maybe U.S. still probably the better market for investors to go into some of those energy stocks?
Yeah, when we look at the Canadian companies, I'm just shaking my head at how cheap some of these companies are. I mean, like we've talked about Hemisphere and InPlay and Surge and Journeys One, Rock are okay. And I look at these companies, I go, they're trading for like 2x cash flow. They're trading below the present value of just their proved reserves. And I don't know if it's a Canadian dollar or what, but the gas price in Canada is low, but Hemisphere is 100% oil company. And it hasn't reported second quarter results yet. I get those next week, but both of those, InPlay and Hemisphere, really look good. But even the bigger ones, Baytex looks really good to me. I looked at that the other day again, and it's having some really good success in South Texas. It's based in Calgary, but it's focused more on the stuff that it's got down there in the Eagle Ford play, and they're having some really good success there. So, yeah, there's some great value, all around. The only ones that are even trading like close to what, 6-7x cash flow is like EOG or Devon's up there a little bit, Coterra. It's just that right now, the ones that produce a lot of gas don't look very attractive to me. But a year from now, that could be all the rage. And I think it's very possible that could be all the rage on the gas side.
All right, Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Always fun to get our monthly update on the energy sector and some of the stocks you are looking at, Dan. I will also post Dan's email in the show notes. You can email him. You can also email me directly to get any of his company reports. He has offered to send those out to you. And hey, I hope you do all visit that Energy Prospectus Group if you are interested in investing in some of these energy stocks, because Dan does a great job of outlining what he likes about a number of these companies. Dan, thank you for your time on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Be sure to go back through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel. Just search the KE Report and listen to all our daily editorials and company updates from throughout the week. Everyone, thanks again for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.